This is...
Wow! What a week.
What a week. Politrics.
Eita, welcome to another episode of Wow, What a Week, hashtag Politrics with Fresh and Botsang. So, as 2025 draws to a close, we look back at the moments that shook power, tested democracy, and exposed the cracks locally, on the continent, and globally. From judges briefing presidents to geopolitics colliding with South Africa's global standing to citizens voting with their feet, this has been quite a year. Wow, what a year. Hashtag Politrics. I'm Fresh, he's Botsang, and you are with us for the next hour.
Morning, Fresh.
Grant.
Grant, bra.
Kishab.
Morning to the viewers and the followers.
Yes, sir.
It has been a bumpy year. I think in the last 3 years we've been doing this show, this 2025 was the bumpiest year of the all. And global, all over the world.
But for me, it's also been the year I've enjoyed the most of doing politics with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also enjoyed it. I think we've matured and we have gelled well with the show.
We found each other.
It has been very interesting. And, you know, I must congratulate you for being Ratswale.
Oh, yes. My daughter got married last weekend and Botsang was there and like a typical bachelor. Like a typical bachelor.
I was just congratulating you.
He had a lot of fun.
I had fun. I enjoyed myself in Botswana. But I think, thinking back now, every time I'm in Botswana, I become like that. And anywhere, whether I'm in Kasane or Cameroon, I just relax and lose it. But I was enjoying it. Congratulations, my brother.
Thank you very much. At least I have another child off my hands. She can go be someone else's problem. I'm kidding. Anyway, so the Madlanga pre-report is out.
Yes.
And it's been handed over to the president.
Yes.
But obviously it's embargoed. It can't even be seen by anyone but him at this juncture.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that? Because some people are saying, why is it being kept like this? But we're also being told a lot of active cases pre-report. What are your thoughts?
You know, Fresh, this is a public commission.
Yes.
Where things were bared in front of us to follow, to read. And when a preliminary report comes, it's been kept away from the public. This commission, the president is not Secret Services, he's representing us.
Okay.
He called on for this commission in order to respond to us, for the questions as a nation we were raising after the allegations of General Mkhwanazi. We should not forget where this thing comes from. This commission, or Madlanga Commission, was formed by the president because the nation was lamenting after General Mkhwanazi had a public media briefing, because the system, the presidency, parliament, and they had failed him and other police officers before. Of matters coming to their attention, and they did not give them the attention it deserves. And that's why General Mkhwanazi resorted to the media. Now, it's already in the public fora or space, and the president wants to hold a preliminary report away from us. I'll tell you what they could have done. I understand some of the reasons given, is that there are active cases that are mentioned in the report. Two, remember there are people's names that were withheld from us, or their identity. And it's fair when you say that they don't want to compromise the cases that are already with the National Prosecuting Authority or before the courts. However, they should have excluded those in a pre-report that they will release to the public. Have some pointers of saying, for example, I have a question already that with this preliminary report, do we have any information that came out where the NPA can prosecute at the moment? Like they've been arresting and doing other things, the police. Do we have cases where they can prosecute? And prosecuting and charging and prosecuting a person, it's in the public interest. It's not a secret anymore. And I don't know why are they keeping the entire report. They could have also prepared a summary of that report for the benefit of the public. The president, take us into confidence. Maybe we'll do it after he goes through the report.
Okay.
I don't know, but they didn't signal that. And also, they were just, you know, they delivered it on Wednesday at midnight. Mm. They were just on the tip of meeting the timeline or time frames. But the beauty about the whole thing is that it was exactly on the period. Remember, it was scheduled for the 17th, the date, which was 3 months after the inception of the commission. Look, they've done well. Congratulations to them. Sure. They've kept the time frames, and I think they've achieved a lot.
What could be in the report that we didn't hear during the commission?
That's why I'm saying I don't know, because there was nothing that was ever said that we didn't hear. The only thing is identities of people and or names of people. That's all. But we heard everything.
So that could be redacted, surely, if the public wanted to have access to the pre-report.
Yes, yes.
Pre-report.
What I think could be, it is the preliminary decisions of the commissioners.
And recommendations.
And recommendations, the preliminary ones. That's the only thing we don't know. Of who should be prosecuted, who should be charged, or what are the preliminary findings. That's the only thing we don't know, but why hide it? And my fear is there are associates, political associates of the president that have been mentioned in the, like, or the faction of the president, or members of the president political party that have been mentioned here. And there are business people that some of them were linked to key political figures in the country. Who knows, when this report comes out public, it would have been toned down in order to protect political interest. And as once you start doing things in secrecy, it makes us question, what if they are going to tone down the report and or recommend amendments in order for to protect your political friends or comrades? But if that happens as well, it will question the integrity of the three commissioners, because I think they should not allow that their recommendations are amended or toned down. That report should come out finally as raw as it should be. Mm. But it's a wait-and-see situation, but I don't think it is fair for the nation that the report is kept secret when things were done barely in front of us.
Yeah. So there was a case of a handful of Kenyans who had applied for work visas.
Yes.
Or work permits.
Work permits, yeah.
So that they could work at this center that is processing refugee applications for Afrikaners.
Yes.
Wanting to flee the genocide that is not happening in this country.
The Trump genocide.
Yes. And there were Kenyans who were meant to come and work here, and their work visas were denied.
Yes.
And they proceeded to still come here and to work illegally. And now they've been found out and have been allowed to self-deport at a diplomatic level. One, I'm certain that the U.S. Embassy would be fully aware.
They were part of that, yeah.
They'd be fully aware, even if these people are not based at the U.S. Embassy.
Yes.
If these people are doing work on behalf of the U.S. Embassy,
exactly.
Surely they would have been vetted
yes.
to make sure that at a security level they check out.
Absolutely.
Secondly, based on labor law in this country, the U.S. Embassy would know that this is a job South Africans can do.
Yes.
So why are we importing Kenyans to do this? At a diplomatic level, why is this not as noisy as I believe it ought to be?
I think you are correct, Fresh. You are 100% correct. We in other countries, actually, the chief of protocol of the Republic of South Africa would have already summoned the chargé d'affaires of America, because they don't have an ambassador.
Yes, the same guy, the junior staffer.
The junior
from
staff.
The G20 handover.
Yeah, don't insult President Trump. He will worsen the situation. He's not a junior staff. He's an acting ambassador. Nonetheless, they would have already summoned him to O.R. Tambo building at Derrico to say, can you come and explain what is going on?
Yes.
Because it is a diplomatic insult. And it is against the Vienna Convention. Let me tell you what the Vienna Convention in the administrative part of diplomacy prescribes. Each and every embassy or foreign mission in a host country you are allowed to can employ locals. It's called the local recruited personnel.
Yes.
So it's South Africans working for a foreign mission here. We're allowed. And you are right, they will go through a very serious vetting, especially with the Americans. They will be known as they to be declared to the South African government for tax purposes to say these people are employed in the embassy as staffers of the embassy. And Americans saw it fit in the middle of this whole diplomatic row that we have with the Americans. They still go to an extent of going to Kenya and recruit, because they didn't just send this message out. They went to recruit, probably through their high commission in Nairobi.
Nairobi, yes.
Now, you bring these people in with visitors visa because their visas, their work permits were declined. Yes, the Americans may argue that, but they were not working inside the embassy or the U.S. consulate in Joburg. They may argue that, but we know that a lot of countries, America is one of them, Germany and other EU member states, are one, and even the Great Britain, they don't issue their visas at their consulates.
Yes.
Or their embassies, they always have a satellite office where they issue visas and process
like
visas.
A visa facilitating center.
Center, yes, yes. So that's part of the embassy, just that they want to handle it remotely, not in their premises. So these people were employed by the American government. They were compensated. They were paid by the American government. The fact that they were paid, it means they were employed, or say they rendered a service and they were compensated. Number one, processing visa is an administrative work. With a country that is high with unemployment rate, especially amongst youth, why will the Americans, and it's also worrying, why will the Americans bring the Kenyans here to come and do that illegally on top of that, understand? But also, I think there's a fault that we did as South Africa as well for allowing them to come in. You know that this person is trying to get a work permit. You allow them into your country with a visitor's visa when you have declined them work permit.
Yeah.
Obviously, they were, and then you don't monitor them. And you don't, you know, there are visitors, and these are the same visitors, seven of them who wanted to come and work here. Now suddenly seven of them arrive on the same flight with visitor's visa, and you allow them in. South Africa should have denied those people entry into the country.
But for instance, does the system flag such people?
Yes, it does. I think it does. It does, because the visas, and it's well updated now. The last time I worked on the consular visa system, it was on a belt up. Once a person applies for a work permit from Kinshasa, from Nairobi, wherever in the world, to come and work in South Africa, and you enter and it's declined by headquarters, all South African missions will get the information.
Hence I'm saying.
Like when people apply for visa or for a permit, there's what we call a visa list.
Sure.
The system automatically checks the person if he's not on the visa list. And my fear is we may be sitting with a country where a policy was amended, and that's why some of the apartheid era policies, I had found them very helpful when it comes to controlling the movement of people and issuing them with travel documents and permits to get into the country. In the yesteryear, when you applied for a South African work permit or study permit and it's declined, first, you can't apply for it whilst you're in South Africa.
Yes.
You must apply at your country of residence.
Yes.
Or country of where you are a citizen. Because sometimes you are a citizen of one country, but you reside somewhere.
Yes.
Okay? Secondly, you must await the outcome in that country.
Mm.
Now, this await the outcome, why do we deny, we allow them entry? Okay, maybe because they've already received because it's going to be very important to know, when did they come with their visitor's visa while they were awaiting the permits, or after they got the decision? I suspect they applied and they came through the visitor's visas. So when they were declined, they were already in the country. Now, this could have led for immigration, because they were arrested by immigration, by the Home Affairs officials. That says to me, they came before the permit, because once the system flags that your permit is declined, the system will say, but this person has entered the Republic. And the immigration police looked for them, and they found them in that US. And it was easy to get them, because we knew where they were going, what they were going to do.
Yes.
So it was easy to find them. But we need to also tighten up, you know, the bolts and the schools in our systems to say, cooling off period. If I have a declined a citizen of country A, a work permit or a study permit or entry into South Africa, there must be a cooling off period to say for the next 1 or 2 months or 3 months, you are not allowed to travel to South Africa on a normal visitor's visa, because then you will abuse it. But they self-deported, as they said, and the Minister of Home Affairs, Mr. Shaiba, has indicated that they are not allowed to visit South Africa for the next 5 years. That's heavy, Benny, and it's good.
Sure.
But I wish the South African government can do that to each and every foreign national who breaks the immigration laws.
Sure.
And I said, we should do it for anyone, whether you are Chinese, European, or American. If you break immigration laws, we should ban you from coming to our country for the next 5 years. And after 5 years, we should not just automatically allow you. We should check if you are complying and you are fit to can associate with us as citizens.
Absolutely. And now for me, the wild thing is, you know, given how stringent the U.S. visa application process is, and how jealously they protect their sovereignty.
Yes.
For them to allow for people to come and work from them from another country and not even care about following due process, it's problematic. It's almost like a middle finger to the country.
Yeah.
That we don't care what your laws say when it comes to labor issues. We want to hire who we want, whether or not they qualify.
Yeah, but look, again, Fresh, this boils down to what has been happening between us and the United States since President Trump came into office. It shows the strained bilateral relationships between the two countries that we are at our worst. And I think the Americans do not care. I think we are caring about this relationship more than the Americans. I don't think they care, but they arrived at a stage whereby they also disrespect the domestic laws of the Republic of South Africa by doing as they wish. You understand? As if this is an extension of the United States. We are no longer a colony of any country. We have never been a colony of the US. And if they are going to continue to abuse the relationship between us and them, then maybe South Africa must come to a point whereby we need you as a global giant, we need you as a trading partner, but you cannot abuse us. Mm. You cannot bully us, you cannot abuse us. And maybe we should arrive at that point and close that chapter and say, let's look for new friends somewhere. Mm. We are not forced, by the way, to be friends with the United States, and especially when they are hostile. And maybe we should just close and cut them out. What do they say in the Kasi language? Ghost them until President Trump has left the office. Because this can worsen the situation, can damage the relations further. So in order to avoid the relationship to be damaged further, you get out of it. You take a pause because you are dealing with an unreasonable nation. They are very unreasonable. They are bully, and the situation may get worse.
Should they have been allowed to self-deport? Or should this have been turned into a, you are here illegally and you lied about the reasons you're going to be here?
You should be charged.
So you should be charged, tried, sentenced, and then Lindela.
Yeah. Look, if you go to Lindela only when they're still determining your country of origin. This was a straightforward one.
Yeah.
And it saved us time and resources. But I think they should have been charged. They should have been hauled before the media. They should have been exposed, like what other countries would have done. And like we have done with other illegal immigrants here. You understand? But it saved time because we knew where they came from. We knew their passport owners. And you know, the other story that is also surprising. They say when the immigration police went to arrest them, there were two officials from the U.S. embassy who were there and who showed in their passports or diplomatic cards that they worked for the U.S. embassy. Mm. So they knew it was their operation. Probably it was the consular attaché or the head of consular who was there working with them. But the Americans were involved. So self-deporting also saves, because then, pardon me, they what do they call it? They flew themselves out of the country. Mm. We didn't have to incur the cost of deporting them.
Yes.
But again, even if I had to wish that they were having lock up in cells for a night or what, and be charged in front of magistrates or court, keeping troublesome people in your house it's already they came with trouble. So the sooner they go, the better for them to leave the country.
But given how porous the borders can get, and yes, I think the Border Management Authority have done a brilliant job.
You
even see their presence at border, at ports of entry.
Yes.
Yeah. You can feel that there's their a presence. New sheriff in town. You can tell that Dr. Masia Pato is leading people who are inspired to work.
Yes.
But unfortunately, there'll always be people in the system who are rotten.
Yeah.
Who'll facilitate for you to break the law and to get back into the country.
Yeah. That's possible. These ones, I don't think they'll come fresh air because they've been flagged already. I will know that they are super chancers if they come back. Anyhow, but as you said, the BMA, led by Dr. Masia Pato, is doing a brilliant job.
Yeah.
Two things that are working against them. Resources, because sure. They need more
boots on the ground.
They're stretched.
Yeah.
They're so stretched that, you know, he also actively participates in operation as the CEO of an entity.
But honestly, I'd rather a CEO who's on the ground and gets his hands dirty and rolls up his sleeves than sits in an air-conditioned office somewhere. Because you better appreciate what your people are working through if you're there with them on the ground.
Especially at this time of the year.
Yes.
Where criminals will take advantage of the large numbers of people traveling, sure. cargoes moving. But the second thing that is training them is what you mentioned, what that is training, you know, border officials, whether they are BMA or customs, because customs don't form part of the BMA. SARS customs, it's corruption. As I said, it's bad elements within the system. Where the government works so hard to can try and protect the borders of the country, then you still have individuals who are taking black bags or brown envelopes in order to facilitate criminals to move. Because it is criminals, people who move. They cannot be a normal person who bribe to cross the border. And then it should be this person who has criminal motives if you start bribing.
In fact, now if I was Dr. Masia Pato, I'd actually speak to one of these boating companies to sponsor us a boat. And I would cruise the Limpopo like this. It's sort of the binocular.
You only say it now. Should have said it at the beginning of the season or the year. Then maybe they would have bought into the story.
Exactly. And I think it's an opportunity even for corporate to get involved.
Yes.
We shouldn't be paying for drones. There are companies out there that make drones that could work with government.
And let me tell you why corporate. Actually, when we formed the BMA, there was talks of the PPP in order to develop the borders.
Oh, yes, the private-public partnerships.
Yes. One of the things that I remember, I can't remember who in the colleagues mentioned it, is to say, you know, corporate, if they wanted to protect their products against illicit goods, they should actually sponsor security. Not physical security, but monitoring of the borders, because you are protecting your own goods and product. Yes. If somebody is going to make a fake a headache powder or toothpaste that is having South African names or brands, then contribute towards protecting your product so that the illicit ones must not enter the country. But again, corporate may stand up and say, but the government never approached us. Or securities, state security may say, we don't want corporate there because we may be seen as siding with this company.
Yes.
And I stand up and say, it's a catch-22 situation.
Listen here, if there's a company that is willing to come on board and say, let's work together, then let it happen.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember there was a time at some stage you heard people from the councils saying, why are outsurance
pointsmen
at intersections? Why them? They stood up and said, we are ready to help. We were needed more than 20 years ago.
22 years now.
And you can't begrudge them the fact that Bona, they saw an opportunity to step up as a corporate. So I said, those who are willing to work must be allowed to work.
It's the same as the companies around Sandton that started fixing the traffic lights, putting cameras all over to fight crime and to close potholes. The people of Sandton feel more safe and more comfortable now because there were shootings and hijackings in the middle of Sandton. And a company like, without advertising them, Discovery, for example, they were losing money. For them to come in with the cameras, they were losing money because of insurance.
Yes.
Whether the car is hijacked or one of the people who's insured with them, their own lives, is dead. So it's a loss for them. So they will rather up the security of their primary clients. And that's how business works, unfortunately.
While we're at the border, I think let's go there by the US. Trump banned South Africa from the G20.
Yeah.
I think South Africa's G20 chairmanship is probably one of the big stories for the year.
Yes.
And it did not have to become what it did, but unfortunately, because of the Trump effect, it became what it became.
Yeah.
And I still argue that we're better off with Trump not attending, because he would have turned it into a circus.
Yeah.
It would have become the Trump sideshow, and it already became a sideshow without him there.
Without him.
Now imagine if he was here.
Yes, bro.
So I think we probably got way more done without America at the G20. But it's obviously a new chairperson of the G20.
Mm-hmm.
South Africa is not welcome. South Africa says, we're not going to boycott, but we're hoping that we'll get the invite that is due to us as a member.
As a member, yes.
And which is brilliant, because you can't boycott and then look back. Oh, makala.
Like they are doing.
Exactly.
Like he's doing, yeah.
Because boycotting or saying I'm not attending is you saying I'm not a part of the party, continue without me.
I think the fact that the G20 hosting by the Republic of South Africa was so much of a success, and a lot of agreements were reached, and there was consensus among the member states that were here. I think that irked the Americans even more to say a party became a successful, nice party without us.
Yes.
They boycotted it. They tried to sneak in the last minute for receiving the baiting from South Africa. But you know, first, now that we are mentioning it, thinking of it, I think the Americans, if they were not the next chair, they would have come to South Africa. They did not come because they knew they were next chair. They will influence the situation. They will try and change the agenda. Like President Trump has already mentioned that he has lobbied the right-wing governments.
Mm.
And I was on TRT World on Tuesday. And that was the topic under discussion.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, sharing the platform with one of the Republican senators or congressmen. And he was arguing that actually the USA is going to change the agenda of all that South Africa had tabled of the globalization, the equality, as well as fair trade, which was supported by many other member states of the G20.
Mm.
And now the Americans say they're going to change that. We cannot be following South Africa leading discussion on global warming or climate change. But it's not the South African agenda.
Yeah.
South Africa was the host. It's part of South African foreign policy and foreign interests. So why wouldn't a country like South Africa table its own foreign policy? And they now want to go and change it without South Africa. As if, and this is where Americans have become diplomatically naive, as if other member states of the G20, they will adopt what the Americans are proposing. You understand? Mm-hmm. As if South Africa swayed. Being the host does not mean you will sway other countries
exactly
to agree. You are just the host of the party of 20 equal people.
Mm.
And other countries did not agree with some of the South African proposals. That's why there was not consensus in some of the things. But that was not a South African party. That was a G20 meeting, summit, and it's going to be the same way as in America.
Mm.
You know what I think is going to happen? The silence of the other 18 members to the request of South Africa, that be like us, don't boycott, go there, but go and argue on our behalf as our fellow members, that we are members here, we are together. I think it was a brilliant move from us diplomatically. However, I think Trump is going to bully them, to bully other countries.
Mm.
And this is what I suspect is going to do. There's something we call a diplomatic silence. You attend these meetings, they table what they want, then you don't reach a consensus.
Mm.
You let just this year pass and being a wasted year. You understand? So I think most of the countries, in order not to irritate and break bilateral relations with the United States, they are actually going to go there and not vote on anything or support anything, or they are only going to support what is common amongst the 20 members. But I still do not hear the noise. Yes, there's only one meeting of the primary meeting of the shepherds that happened. There's only one, but one is enough. I did not get enough outcome out of that meeting that happened without South Africa to say, what are other member states saying? Where is the report of that meeting? Why is it not being shared? Of course, Trump won't share it with South Africa, but if South Africa wants it, they will get it from other member states to say, what was the outcome and the conclusion regarding the matter that I think was supposed to be number one on the agenda. Where is our other member? They're supposed to be number one on this multilateral summit agenda. And especially we are handing over to the Americans. But I think we are going to wake up and we'll be in the UK. Trump is going to make noise with his administration for the entire year regarding the G20. And South Africa and other countries are going to strategically, it's a missed opportunity for Americans. They're going to strategically focus on other multilateral forums, you know, like the BRICS and developing other things. You understand? In them actually snubbing South Africa, what do they call it? Some, you know, diplomatic or foreign economists are saying that's why the rand also strengthened since last week against the dollar. The rand is where it was 3 years ago today. And I think some of those things are caused by the conduct of the Americans. They're shooting themselves on the foot.
Absolutely. Now, the Sherpa meeting that happened without South Africa. I would have applied for a visa for, is it Dango?
Yes.
I would have applied for a visa for him, just so the record states that we attempted to attend, because we're members, I get it.
Yes.
We're members, Mus. I would have actually turned it into a, we're going to tick all the boxes we need to tick, so that for the record, we were ready to attend, but we were not invited.
Yes. Well, look, that's my other question. In the G20 protocols, this invitation is just a formality to say the meeting will be held at this place, or coincidentally, it's Trump's, what do you call this place in Miami? You
know, the Mar-a-Lago.
Meeting, they say he owns it.
In Mar-a-Lago?
Yes.
No, he owns Mar-a-Lago,
I didn't know. Now, most probably, I don't know if it was the main shepherds like Tango, or it was the operational ones for admin and preps who were attending. But I'm saying most of them probably have American visas. I won't be surprised that if Ambassador Dango has a diplomatic visa of the U.S. already. But the problem is, will the American, you don't want to also embarrass yourself to fly there. Let's say you already have an old visa, and then they stop you from attending. But as you say, maybe we should have done that as a nation. Those who have visas must fly to the U.S. and they must be returned. Political parties were going to cry, what do they call it, wasteful resources. But would have sent a very clear message on how the USA has again contravened the Vienna Convention, now against South Africa. They've done it against many other countries. But yeah, Fresh, it's going to be, you know, you said it at the beginning of the essay, guys, it's only 2 months and the world is already crying and we still have another 56 plus 10 more months, 46 months to go.
Yeah.
It's hardly a year. And President Trump has pressed a reset on, and he's continuing. You know, he's continuing. I mean, like I said, I was with one of their congressmen, and he was still talking about human rights issues in South Africa. Then I asked him, what are you talking about? And I gave them statistics of farm murderers in South Africa. You know, in our financial year ends end of March. Our financial year 2024-2025, that ended the 31st of March, there were 8 farm murderers in South Africa. Only 8.
Yeah.
Guess what? 5 of the 8 people killed in the farms, they were not farmers. They were black farm workers.
Yeah, those stuff.
5.
Yeah.
3 of the people who were killed, they were farmers. One was killed by a spouse. One was killed. 2 were murdered by illegal foreign nationals that worked for them.
Sure.
Understand? So they were robbed and killed by their own workers. And that's why I always say political parties like Freedom Front Plus, the DA, that are making noise about white farmers and land and genocide and what, supported by AfriForum. Have you noticed how silent they are with regard to illegal immigrants or immigrants working in South Africa? Because their own members, their own farmers, their own followers, they are hiring these illegal people which are posing a threat to them and their safety. You can't hire cheap labor to come and take care of your children and your yard and your dogs just because it's cheap labor and it's not unionized like South African laborers. And you are avoiding politically conscientized people. Mm. And then you take desperate people from abroad or other neighboring countries who come here without papers. You are risking your own life. Mm. You are risking your own business. I don't know if they're not seeing it from that angle.
Yeah.
That if you bring somebody from any other country illegally into the country, the day that person slaughter you, how will the government trace that person when we don't have fingerprints, we don't have the passport, we don't know how that person entered the country?
Mm.
And sometimes breaking the law, it is to your own detriment.
So,
and then they go and say, farmers are being murdered in South Africa. You understand? You know, I saw one interview of a lady who applied to go to the U.S. on this South Africa genocide, Afrikaner people. And her daughter, this lady says, she just wants to go because she's fearing for her life and all that. Yeah. And her daughter is a teenager.
So?
Said, I actually told my mom she can go. I don't want to go. This girl is so exposed that she said she has black friends. And she says she has seen how black people are being killed. Youth, not adult youth in townships, you know, drugs and all those. He said, no, this is crime that is affecting everybody. That's the kind of a white South African citizen that President Ramaphosa should have taken to the Oval Office.
Mm.
The young girl in 10 years who stood up in front of BBC.
Yes.
She was actually interviewed by one of our former, Clear Mawisa.
Oh, yes, 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 yes.
And she said, no, I'm Cut a teenager. Lunch. No, she's with BBC now.
Ah.
Yes, she's BBC. Yeah. I heard from people last week that she's with BBC now. And this young girl was saying, I'm white. I'm an Afrikaner. I live in a farm. I go to school with some of the children of the farm workers. And I have seen how there is crime in South Africa and it's affecting black people more. Now, this is an Afrikaner girl saying that. And if you want to tell me that's not our future diplomat, a patriot defending this country.
Mm.
Unlike his fathers and grandfathers on AfriForum, they ran to the U.S. and say there's genocide in South Africa. Now it has backfired.
Mm.
And nobody is telling us, where are our African farmers who went to the U.S.? Are they okay? Are they getting what they were promised? Where are they?
Honestly, I think the less airtime and fuel we give the little fire they thought they were starting, the better. You know what I mean?
I hear you. I hear what you are saying. Let's not give them a job, but it will be important to know what is going on with them.
Mm.
Is it moonlight, red roses, and sunshine for them?
It won't be, because America might be offering you this asylum, but you still need to work damn hard.
Yeah.
And the cost of living in the U.S. is such that to live the way you did here in the U.S., your average person needs to hold on at least two jobs.
Yes, yes.
Or be in some high-paying job. But for your average South African who might be a middle class in this country, to live in the U.S., it's a different kettle of fish.
Unless they've got their own savings and they took their money, which will be, you know, exhausted very soon. Because the stipend that they're giving them will not sustain them to live a standard of life of South Africa.
Mm.
It will not.
Because you must still go find employment.
Exactly.
You must still find gainful employment in order to at least try and maintain your standard of living.
Standard of living, yeah.
What's Paniwa in the U.S.? It's I would never want to live there, not because I don't want to work hard, but I've seen the uphill journeys a lot of people have been on just to try and just keep the lights on in the U.S.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard so. I've heard,
and it's you and 300 million other people.
So, why do you want to subject yourself to that?
Not that I was paniwi mo, but the little you make here, you can still stretch it. You can still stretch it.
Kidi Zemba, we can stretch Kidi Zemba. I was paniwi next the car. Hey, bro. Yeah.
Anyway, so there's one story that I picked up this week, Trump saying that we've signed a deal with Rwanda and
yes,
M23.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then M23 announced 2 days ago that they'd captured, there was fighting in South Kivu,
yeah,
of the DRC, and a city had been captured there.
Yes.
And then Trump, I think, made a threat
to the Rwandese, not even to M23.
Yes. And then they said, okay, we're going to withdraw.
Yes. I've followed that story. I heard from the residents in that place to say they've started seeing withdrawals, the M23 vehicles driving off. So the Trump administration has threat has seems to have worked. But you know what are the residents of that area saying? It was in French, but when I was watching TV, but translated into English subtitles, they were saying it. The withdrawal can worsen the situation because there are other insurgents, other opportunists. Oh. So the when they take over and they come and mine their minerals, they lose the minerals. They've taken the seat. But when M23 leaves, other insurgents rises who want to continue mining and the government can contain them. And they start by doing what? They start by attacking the residents first. So it's a very volatile situation what is happening in the south of Kivu Lake. But I was not comfortable with Washington threatening Kigali. To say if the M23 are not withdrawing, we know you are sponsoring them with arms. You know you are backing them up. We'll come for you, Kigali. You, Kagame, the president of Rwanda, make sure that those people leave. But like I said, it looks like the threat works. But you know, Fresh, America is going to push everybody out of the DRC. We should not be surprised that in the next few months or in a year, there'll be a much bigger war in the DRC for minerals. The French are still there. M23 is still there. Other rebels are still there. The opposing political parties, the Rwandese have their interests there. I will not be surprised. I pray it does not happen, but should it happen, I will not be surprised that the Democratic Republic of Congo may break into a very, very serious military conflict because of the Americans wanting everybody out and only them. Because that's the argument they reached with Tshisekedi to say, let everybody go out. We'll come and protect and defend you. At what cost and for what? The same thing that they promised Zelensky.
Sure.
That's what they're doing in the DRC. They said to Zelensky, we'll come as NATO, but we know it was the Americans in the forefront. 70% of the budget that NATO has spent on the Russia-Ukraine war comes from the U.S., and I said, that's why at the moment Zelensky is trained because the U.S. has paused sending arms, have paused giving him money. And now the country is in tatters and they want him now to sign a deal and sign off part of his country or what was battled for to the Russians.
Sure.
And that's the problem in people in this world still believing in the U.S.
Sure.
I don't understand the kind of leader. Unless you are a warmonger like Netanyahu, and for you it's okay to kill people, then you can believe the USA. But which other normal country that is at peace or struggling to be in peace still want to believe that the USA are peacemakers?
Sure.
Where on earth has the Americans historically ever brokered a peace or became part of a peace deal and they themselves adhere to it? Go check the history books and tell me where have they ever done that. They only go on peace when they leave after they've destroyed everything. That's how they operate. And the world is still playing in the hands of the Americans. Their might is their military. You take that away from them, they are nothing. There's nothing special about the U.S. except their military, because other countries can do without them. And that's why they're using the military in order to push things, to drive things. And the economy is based on making arms, selling arms, destroying other countries, taking wealth and minerals of other countries. That's the economy is based on that. And the sooner the world realizes and start isolating the United States, they will see a world will be a better place.
The big question is, does the world have the balls to do that? I doubt it, and I doubt it will happen. So.
We can't be reproducing human beings that are born fearing America. Somewhere, somehow, we need the Traores of today. We need the Yang Kunjung we need them in the world. We need those kind of leaders who will stand up against the bullies.
Unfortunately, for every Traore, there is someone in the same rooms you are in who's willing for a fee to slip poison into your tea.
I think there's not even one. There's more in the room. If you are sitting with 12 people in the room, trust me, 8 of those people are probably want to kill you, or they have been told to kill you. Yeah.
Anyway, let's bring it back home.
Yes, sir.
Shamila Batoi.
Yes.
Has been a part of a... There's an inquest into one of her staffers.
Yes. Actually, her deputy.
Her deputy.
Head is a deputy of the national one. Yes.
And now there's been talk of how she has refused to go back and testify.
Yes.
Which surely then means she's in contempt.
Of course, yeah.
And you came up with the phrase, the Zuma law.
Yes.
And the Zuma law is, if I'll testify,
exactly.
Will she be locked up?
That's what I want to see. I think Shamila Batoi has demonstrated an element and a level that is very disappointing from a person who's supposed to be one of the number one or top three law enforcers in the country, to be head of a National Prosecuting Authority. And for her, but it started in the ad hoc committee in parliament, her conduct. Remember, she has been facing questions for various things. Part of the thing she was in the ad hoc committee for was not the same as the commission of inquiry about his her deputy Chauke. It was regarding General Mukwanazi's, you know, allegations about the conduct of some National Prosecuting Authority officials with the criminal cartels. But the way she was refusing to answer questions, both at the ad hoc committee and this inquest, I saw a level of arrogance and disrespect to other government officials or political office bearers who were putting questions to her. There was a very heated time between herself and advocate
Nkaitobi.
Yes, Nkaitobi. It's you know, somebody will say there's a level and an element of a Jamnandas in her. You can see that conduct.
But I could have said I've said this the same before.
Exactly. You can see that he's looking down at people, down.
That energy,
demeaning.
That energy is familiar, and we're born from very far.
Exactly. Now people are up in arms, and I'm saying this is the Zuma law, because this country, and I've warned against it fresh. I was sitting with you on this platform, and I said we are doing something that is going to come and catch up with us in future.
Yeah.
Just because it's a Zuma. Zuma was a problem child of South Africa. We even came with practices that are not in the book. Yes, when you have a contempt of court, you may be arrested, you may be sentenced, you may have to pay a fine. We all know the law makes classification of what you call it of criminal activities. They are classified 1 to 5. For example, murder or rape, maybe it's 5 or 6. You understand? You hit a person, you slap him with a slap, it's assault, common assault. You pay a fine, 1,500, or you are sent. There's an example of the former CEO of RAF, Mr. Collins Letswana. You remember he also refused to go and appear in front of SCOPA and all that. They were in court. I'll make an example. And part of the application was he must be jailed for 30 days because the previous court said for contempt of court, he must be jailed for 30 days.
Yeah.
That's what should have happened when Jacob Zuma had a contempt of court, because the Commission of Inquiry carried the weight of a court. But what did we do? That commission led by the then Chief Justice or Deputy Chief Justice, I can't remember which rank was, and Ntate Zondo at that time, decided to take Jacob Zuma to the Concord. And we saw for the first time, at least me, seeing a constitutional court sentencing a person or a citizen to prison for 15 months, a constitutional court. While we have seen the constitutional court in the Makate case.
Referred
back to where the correct decision was supposed to make. You see,
yes.
That was the goal. It's not in the constitutional court powers to can pass sentences and judgment. You take matters to the constitutional court If it's a constitutional threat, if it talks to the constitution, if it's a constitutional matter, not anything you jump to the constitutional court and you know you are sitting with seven judges there, or constitutional court judges, you know that, and then the same complainant becomes part of the decision making.
Sure.
That was also wrong. Shamila Bato is in the same position. He defies a commission of inquiry or an inquest. She defies it. She says, I'm not coming there. I'm done with you guys. I'm left with 1 month in the office.
So when something like that happens, what powers do the Nkabinde inquiry have to deal with the fact that she refuses to be cross-examined?
The only thing they can do is to go to the magistrate court and lay a charge of contempt of court. And it goes to the magistrate court or to the police, then to court or to her office.
So
her office, the NPA,
yes,
must take her to court for contempt of court. But we know what does it care. 1,500 rands or fine.
But there's a Zuma precedent, the OSET. Yeah.
So what happened? So are you saying they must go to the Concord?
No, I'm asking that there's the Zuma precedent that you're in contempt, therefore Raukwala.
Yeah. Look, first, there is the Zuma one was even worse because he was not even given an option for a fine. While the law makes provision, contempt of court, it makes provision that you can be sentenced to a fine, imprisonment of 15 months or whatever, or both. Or even suspended, depending on whether you've got other crimes before and all that. So you look at all the facts. That's normal procedure. So what is supposed to happen is we want to see Shamila Batohi actually being imprisoned for contempt of court, 30 days or 15 months with a fine, because she's supposed, you know, it has supposed to be both, because she's a lawmaker. She's a custodian of the laws of this country as the director of national prosecution. How do you disrespect the law that you are supposed to enforce? You understand? That's why I said at the beginning, her conduct is very unbecoming. There's an element of arrogance. And I think Shamila Batoi knows that they won't do what they did to Zuma. She can be fined. And then come January, she'll be, you know, enjoying her last, she's probably taken leave. She's probably taken leave of her remaining days. She won't come back to office. But this is where President Ramaphosa, because his responsible is the direct-line manager of Batoi, is the one who appointed Batoi or even contrary to recommendations of whatever the committee that was there. The president must call Batoi to order. And you see, once you start making, you remember what I always talk about, once you start using politics to influence state entities and organs, you are actually compromising yourself. Probably President Ramaphosa, where we are sitting, cannot take action against Shamila Batoi to can actually even freeze her, what do you call it, as part of discipline. So we are freezing your pension until you come in account. You understand? They did it with Busisiwe Mkhwebane, the former public protector. What's the difference between the conduct of Busisiwe? And Busisiwe Mkhwebane did not actually defy the state. He cooperated with the state. He went into an inquiry about it. She faced parliament and all those things. This one is refusing. And now we should ask ourselves as citizens, what is it that Shamila Batoi has on political office bearers who are her principals? And she's got the Minister of Justice as a principal. She's got the President of the Republic, and he's got Parliament that she's accountable to. Now, a person who's supposed, you know, we were giving this person 7 years back, and this is what she is giving us as a nation. After you fail to secure convictions for major cases, you are sitting with an inquiry of your deputy that was reported years back for misconduct.
Sure.
You claim that, no, the email was not to you. You were CC'd. So if you are CC'd, it's not to you. You never read it.
Sure.
What kind of a manager is that?
What I want to know, looking at the fact that obviously this is about whether Chauke is fit for office or not.
Yes.
Chauke.
Yes.
And Mukai Tobi has managed to have Batohi concede that, Glenn, we don't have evidence here. What do you think is going on?
Again, the fact that she kept quiet and protected and never handled this matter internally to discipline or to investigate allegations against Advocate Chauke.
Yes.
You did focal for all the time. Now we are in an inquiry. and you are being pushed by one of the best advocates we
He's
have
brilliant.
In the country.
He's brilliant.
Pushed to a corner that you even concede. But look at, it's in her nature to argue, waste time and concede at the end. Because she did the same at the ad hoc committee with many of the things that were placed before her. And you waste our time and resources. But what Jamila Batoi and whoever is involved on her side with all this process are failing and are to realize is the danger they are putting and the damage they are causing to the judicial system. They are causing danger because in future when I'm arrested or I'm facing the same situation, I will say, but my lord, whatever, in court, you let that other one and that other one and that other one. You understand?
Yeah, but we're not all equal before the law.
You know, the nice thing is the precedent. You said precedent.
Yeah.
You can't run away from it. It will embarrass the state. You understand? It will embarrass the state.
Or the judiciary.
Let me actually say the judiciary. Yes. It will embarrass them because it will demonstrate inconsistency in applying the law. It's not supposed to. It's happening because of one race, it's happening because of maladministration, it's happening because of bribery and corruption, that courts on matters of the same nature will sometimes rule out different when the facts and the elements are the same. But that shows biasness in all these things. That shows, I mean, one of the things that this gentleman advocating late Obi did was to expose how some of the administrative processes are not applied to some of the people. And like wasting time. You know, the time they took to can bring Chauke to the table, it's actually advocate Chauke has been disadvantaged. Because if you had something against me 3 years back, why did you see it?
Sure.
It's whether it's wrong or right, it's immaterial. What is material is that why was action not taken timeously?
Yes.
When allegations started coming up.
And if really this is about what you say it's about, then it should have been handled differently or handled timeously.
Timeously, yes. Because this is very serious things that has to do with judgment of people's cases. Some they included murders. Other people who were supposed to be in prison are not in prison and things like that. It's causing a damage to the judiciary. The whole judicial system. The other day I was saying to Minister Kubai, as Mamuluku, not as the minister.
Yes.
I was saying, you know, Sisi, I think you want to leave a legacy at justice. Go and run a lifestyle audit of the department.
Sure.
Start from the cleaner. Start from that. I've seen it with my eyes.
To people managing the roster.
Start from the person taking care of court files.
Yes.
Right up to the highest judge of the judiciary. Run a lifestyle audit. You will see miracles. We can clean the judiciary just by running the lifestyle audit. You will find things that will shock you.
Because also, we can't assume that some human beings are better than others and are not beyond reproach.
Exactly. Exactly.
A human being is a human being is a human being. And yes, there are certain human beings we hold to a higher standard.
Oh.
So those are the very human beings that we hold to a different standard that should be having lifestyle audits.
Exactly. Yes, because we are not subjecting them or they are not subjected to a normal day-to-day life of an ordinary citizen.
Absolutely.
We should check when Butang and Fresh go to party and dance. What is Judge ABC doing with that time? What are they doing with that time? You understand? When a judge earns 4 million per annum and the lifestyle of that judge started showing that, but this person is earning 10 million, where is the other money coming from? Understand? Where is the other source of income, including the lawyers? And you know there's a talk that there's lawyers without offices who sit in court. I don't know if you've been to a court, especially a magistrate court. And you have these lawyers, they're never in offices. They're always sitting there on the benches. Do you have a lawyer? Do you have a lawyer? Come, we'll sort it out. That's why courts are supposed to start sitting at 9, but judges and magistrates, they come only at 10, sometimes at 11. Because they are busy in the chambers dealing with these lawyers who are having offices on the benches of the court. I've been to court many times, Rash. I've been taken by lawyers to a magistrate office. Said, no, let's go to the magistrate. I'll sort this thing out.
Yeah.
They sit there. They talk. No, you can go home now. Don't worry. This case will be removed from the roll. Haibo. Just like that. Who? You know, a magistrate. and a lawyer. I'm not talking about the clerk of the court stealing documents. No, 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 no. There's a talk, there's a meeting, reasons are given in chambers, and you walk. And you want to tell me, oh, that's equal justice. That's not equal justice. That is because Botsang at that time had money to can pay this, not bribe, pay this lawyer quickly, who doesn't pay rent, receives this cash from me, doesn't declare tax, he's friends with a magistrate or an acting magistrate who's also a lawyer, a practicing lawyer, he's acting that time. These people are in the business of business, nothing else. They are in business of business. And this is about the lives and the well-beings of people.
Sure.
And these people that we hold high, I mean, Mukwanazi's allegations, they've been proven to be true about the judges and the judiciary. They have been proved, before we even end the investigation, they've been proven to be true. How may we have a judge president of the Eastern Cape sitting in front of a commission for an alleged sexual misconduct? So it shows that they are human beings. And then we have a judge who was locked up in the last few weeks with his son and other involved people. We have had such people. Like I said, me, I'm one of the people who believe that these people were put on high pedestals, pastors, judges, presidents. You actually will find that they are the most corrupt people. I'm not saying any specific one or generally they are corrupt. I'm saying because of the level we have put them. Understand? We know of how in the world, or even in this country, diplomats and people in blue lights, official ones, not the Matlala style ones, illicit goods were found in them.
Yeah.
Drugs were found in police vehicles or prominent people's vehicles. Sure. We have seen that happening. So what makes us think that pastors, judges, presidents, ministers, diplomats
are beyond reproach?
What makes us think that?
Sure.
Treat everybody equally, apply the law equally. You will rid of a lot of corrupt elements in the system.
Sure. We're out of time.
Oh, we should go home.
We're out of time. We should go on holiday.
Yes, sir.
And we're back again the second Saturday of the year. I think the 10th or something. The Saturday, the 10th. Or is it the other Saturday?
No, I was just worried. I wouldn't rush. If we say you must come the other side, it's okay. But I was confused when I heard on the radio on our last day.
Yes.
You guys are saying you are coming back only on the 11th. I'm like, what will we be doing from the 7th? The country, the world is waking from the 7th.
I know, we're on leave.
It's fine. For me, it's okay. We can come back the second Saturday, which is around the 10th.
Okay.
But depending if Trevor and Keleto are...
Yeah, you see, our staff might still be on holiday or enjoying the break, so it might just be the following Saturday.
And probably there'll be nothing much to do in the world.
Yes.
Or there's no news. People will be partying Christmases and all that. But yeah, Fresh, there's been a very big bump here. Thanks to the viewers, the followers, their inputs, comments. We'll see them next year.
What I can't believe is in a couple of months, we'll be celebrating 3 years of sitting here with you every single Saturday morning at 8. And thank you for being a part of it.
Yeah.
Where do we find you on social media, sir?
Let's chat on social media, botsangm@gmail.com or 083-884-7787 on WhatsApp.
Sure.
And then at BotsangM on social media handles. I don't celebrate festivities, Christmas, and my new year is in July.
Sure.
So for me, it's quiet moment.
What happens in July? Why July?
It's an African New Year. It falls from July to August, depending on the harvest time. But sure. I celebrate my new year, the Pan-Africanist way.
Okay, so I now celebrate the Tlafula.
Yeah.
Yes.
So Christmas is dead for me. So this is the time I use. I write a lot during this time. Now that we have went public with my case and my new book, come February, I'll be sitting here with a freshly baked copy. That's my plan, to finalize everything and clean it up.
Yeah.
And then we can move in.
Before we say goodbye, there's a story that we can't say goodbye without talking about.
Yes.
The murder of DJ Waras.
Oh, yes.
DJ Waras was very outspoken. The thing is, unfortunately, in this country, we have a habit of reducing people to the one thing we think they're good at when we don't know how multifaceted they are. And Waras was actually in security.
Yes.
He was part of the security industry. He ran a security company.
Mm-hmm.
So he was not just a DJ. He was not just a guy who makes noise at night. He was not just the guy you hear on the radio.
I actually know more of him when he moved to the security because he was out speaking. He was on public platforms. Yes. I knew he was a DJ, but not his big follower.
Sure.
So I know him for the work he was doing, which I think he was murdered for.
And I mean, he was very outspoken about the state of downtown Johannesburg, hijacked buildings. Buildings that are overcrowded, illegal immigration. It was very outspoken about
levels of crime.
Levels of crime. What needs to be done to clean up downtown Johannesburg?
Yes.
And his security company, I think, was doing security in a couple of buildings that had already been reclaimed.
Yeah.
So cleaned up. And he was assassinated on Sunday. I think he was shot in the head, and I think two shots to the chest, if I'm not mistaken. So these people knew what they were doing. They needed him out of the way.
And first, when you look at the scene where he was shot from the photos I've seen, it was him and only him. Three shots were fired.
Mm.
Two to his chest, one to his head. Nobody has no stray bullet around. There were hawkers who were busy selling, going on with their normal daily life. Nobody was threatened or injured. And this is the kind of brazen criminality we are faced with in this country. And for what? For a person who was doing his job. So you do right in this country, you get killed or attacked or targeted. And again, it's what I've been saying. If we don't enforce the law, we are creating an opportunity for criminals.
Sure.
Criminals were harboring illicit goods, prostitution, as well as trafficking of children and women in those hijacked buildings. And most of these hijacked buildings, sadly, Fresh, majority of them, and it's on record, were state-owned buildings.
Yes.
That were flats belonging to the city of Joburg. And how do I know that it's most of them? Because when we had Herman Mashaba as the then a candidate of the Democratic Alliance being the mayor of Joburg, he did a stock taking of government buildings.
Did an audit.
Yes, an audit, because there was money going out to spend on security. And he wanted to fix that, but unfortunately he was removed or he resigned from the DA, and people said he was xenophobic. Because majority of these buildings, we have to tell it as it, are occupied by foreign nationals. There are South Africans who are occupied.
And many undocumented.
Undocumented from the DRC, Congo, from Nigeria and other African countries. Now, people come to your city, a city like Joburg, downtown, right in the middle of Joburg. They take over government buildings and we let it happen to run to this extent, whereby in one building you find that there are more than 10,000 people living there.
Yeah.
And I was listening to one of the journalist investigators. They say, actually, it's lucrative business to hijack buildings. They say you can make 5 million.
It's easy money.
Yes.
It's easy money.
5 million rands, you can make it easy from collecting rents per month. That's why they would go out to destroy and kill human beings who are hired to can do their job. But the government should take over, should reclaim Joburg, clean it, and then hand it over to the citizens.
Why do you think there's no political will to do what needs to be done? Yes, I get it. There's NGOs that might try and get in the way because, hey, the Constitution says this, don't evict people unless you give them a place to stay. And, you know, to quote Waras, there's nobody in the city that popped out of nowhere. Everyone comes from somewhere.
Yes.
Either go back to where you come from.
Yeah.
If you're not going to be a legal, law-abiding citizen in the city. It's actually so simple. But for some reason, there doesn't seem to be political will to clean up this rot that's happening downtown Johannesburg. I mean, I remember there was a time the DA was speaking about we need the army in the Cape Flats because we're not going to win the
gangs battles.
We're not going to win what's happening when it comes to gang warfare.
Yes.
in the Western Cape. And I'm going to go as far as to say, without the military, we can't clean downtown Johannesburg.
It's impossible. Ah, JMPD mixed with SAPS and Amapanyaza and whoever, they will not be able to.
And the Department of Home Affairs.
And the Department of Home Affairs, yeah.
You need a multi-pronged approach that says, we're going to go building to building. We're going to sanitize every single building.
Yes.
And then once we know that building is legit, we cordon it off.
Exactly.
We cordon it off and make sure that the occupation is legit.
Exactly.
And then you move to the next building.
Exactly.
You do that until we clean up the city. If your papers are not in order, sort out your papers. Nobody is saying, you know, foreigners should not be in this country.
No.
Me, I moved to the city in 1995. But I've made sure my papers are legit because I don't want to be looking over my shoulders.
But Fresh, you ask the question, why is there no political will?
Yeah.
What if politicians are benefactors, indirect benefactors of the criminality that is happening there?
Like the claim with the Zamazamas?
Like with the Zamazamas, the
illegal mining.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And then, 2 weeks ago, Mr. Van der Merwe being killed on the night he was supposed to go public to tell which politicians are benefiting from Zamazamas. A week ago, we have another security official who gets killed after he has been repeatedly speaking about hijacked buildings, how they are hoarding criminals, how drugs, human trafficking is happening in these hijacked buildings. You understand? Now, when you mention the NGOs, that they will go to court, let them go to court. It should not stop the government from enforcing the law. Mm. The court, I can tell you why these NGOs will win in courts.
Mm.
On one element, courts will say to the government, you have let this happen so far. You have allowed this to happen, that people must, okay, so give them accommodation.
But
what the court will not do,
mm.
if we do it correctly and demonstrate that the people who are there illegally and some are for criminal activities, some are foreign nationals. I don't think any normal court will say to the government, take care of those criminals, take care of those people. And so when we have Lindela, you can put the criminals there or illegal nationals and deport them off the country. But I think I will support the fact that bring the army into Joburg.
Yeah.
Bring the military into Joburg. Take over Joburg.
The minute there's a military coming in to clean up, there'll be an NGO saying, yeah, we must demilitarize, we must be careful. This rings of our old apartheid. We need to clean up the city, guys.
If the old apartheid tactics kept people's lives safe and cleaned the cities, We then should use those tactics.
Sure.
We are not going to harass civilians and what. You are taking over what belongs to the state. Those buildings belong to the city of Joburg. Those buildings are a threat to people's lives, to safety, you know, health hazards.
Mm.
Which court will actually go against? And sometimes that's why I say we need political leaders who can put their foot down.
Mm.
If President Ramaphosa can drag the Palapala case, the CR17 bank accounts, and many other things that he has dragged for so long in court. If the NGOs go to court, President Ramaphosa must drag them for the next 2 years while we are cleaning the city.
Mm.
Do the job. Look, when Kenny Kunene was the acting mayor of Joburg, and he's from Patriotic Alliance, and then Dr. Mqini Chwaku is from the Economic Freedom Fighters, he's the MMC for Safety and Security. They teamed up. They went for those buildings. They were never taken to court because they were doing it the right way.
Mm.
The multi-approach we are talking about, they took Home Affairs, the immigration police with, they took JMPD with, they asked SAPS for backup, and they came in as political office bearers to take whatever they could take away at the time and caught in some of the buildings, one or two. But he explained something, Kenny Kunene, why he can't do that now. He says because he is a MMC of transport, so he can't jump into another. He could do it because
he was acting mayor.
Mm. And I said, why doesn't Dada Morero do that?
Or if Letshaba to clean Josie, then move Kenny to
be the mayor.
To be a different MMC then.
Yeah,
so that he has the ability
to
within
do that.
His scope of work to clean up Josie. Since he's a troll alone, then let Kenny do it.
And since he's willing, he's got passion to do that. You understand? Yeah, then let him do it. But this is a very big thing. It definitely needs a national intervention. I don't see any solution. If you can't bring the army, at least increase the forces of the political killing task team, because this thing is political.
Yeah,
it is political to me. Warren that for, you understand? It's very political because he was doing a job that was supposed to have been done by the government.
Sure.
protecting the residents and the citizens and property owners.
Sure.
This falls under protection of, for those who own those buildings privately, white people and AfriForum have always used protection of private property.
Sure.
So people who own those properties, they even had to go and hire a company to protect their own properties against hijackers.
Mm.
And that's a state responsibility.
Sure.
And now we have lost life of somebody who was making a change, a patriot who was making a change in the community and the city of Joburg.
Mm.
I mean, if we say we want to clean Joburg, then let's have the right people sitting in those positions. Luckily, we are having local government elections, you know, coming in the next few months, whereby I think there will be a political change in the city of Joburg.
I was going to say, the one way we can ensure that Waras's death was not in vain is come local government elections in a year, vote so decisively, whomever you're saying, I trust you to help us clean Josie.
Yes.
Have a full mandate.
Exactly.
And don't have to negotiate for 51%.
No. Have a full mandate. Have
vote
a majority.
That decisively. That we can turn around and hold these people accountable that we've said, we trust you to look after our city. Because if we don't vote decisively, we're going to continue governing in circles. Meanwhile, Josie Abola.
I know, we have destroyed.
And then we say we love our city.
Yeah, I know. We allowed criminals and from all over the world to destroy Joburg.
Mm.
Kenny was even saying there are people from as far as India who have hijacked the building.
Mm.
How do we arrive at a Chinese hijacking a building in my land?
Mm.
And then I must go to court to get a court order to evict you.
Imagine.
Guys, I call it demon crazy. If democracy is that what it is, then it's demon to the citizens and the residents of Joburg. Anyway, yeah.
Now I'm saying sometimes democracy is not in the best interest of getting anything done, guys. Do with that information what you want. But sometimes democracy actually gets in the way of getting shit done.
I'm saying enforce the law.
Mm.
Enforce the law.
Mm.
If you are a law enforcer and you find your colleague being bribed and compromising your operation, report him, expose him.
Mm.
If it's your boss, even expose your boss.
Mm.
You understand? If we do not do that, put these people in the limelight, then we won't be able to solve this thing.
Yeah. Waras, rest in peace, my dude.
Yeah.
Your death is not in vain. We are going to keep this torch on for you. By hook or crook, that's what we're all going to do. Well, those of us that are willing to do it. Obviously, many of us are just keyboard warriors. Ra Twitter, Haiwani, and then we go back to our cushy lifestyles. And unfortunately, nothing is going to change if all we're going to do is tweet. At some stage, something has got to give, and something giving means walk your talk. Whatever the talk is, walk that talk. That's all.
Thanks, Father.
B, thank you very much, my guy. Thank you for being a part of Wow What a Week, hashtag Politrix, for another year. In February, we are turning 3 years old, and it's all thanks to you. And let 2025 be a reminder to all of us that democracy doesn't collapse loudly. Democracy is chipped away slowly. It erodes from pressure, fatigue, unanswered questions. And I think the biggest trick of all is convincing citizens, me and you, that none of this really affects our lives. All of it matters. Every single nuance of whatever is happening affects the bigger picture. That's how you chip away at democracy. So let's guard it jealously. Have yourselves an incredible festive season. If you celebrate Christmas, have a Merry Christmas, an incredible 2026. If you don't, enjoy the peace that hopefully you're going to find in your heart, in your soul, and in your mind over this festive season. Wishing you all the best for 2026. Coming to you from Discover TV, let them be your stage. Find them on social media and book yourself the studio and use it for your own podcast or for your music video or whatever it is you'd like to record. Shout out to Trevor and his crew at Pezulu Works for making us look good, sound good every single week for the past 3 years. Keletso Modisa King is our executive producer. Thank you for keeping this ship tight as it is. Keletso, we appreciate you. And most importantly, you for tuning in every single week, for sharing, for engaging, for commenting. Re Alenganyo, we appreciate you. And we love the fact that you choose us when you could have spent something, your time doing something else. Until next year, next season, next month, next week. Have a wow rest of 2025 in spite of yourselves. We'll see you again soon. Take care.